Blog Talk Radio.
Generally, the Constitution is a charter of negative liberties. Says what the states can't do to you, says what the federal government can't do to you, but it doesn't say what the federal government or the state government must do on your behalf.
Fast on a rough road, riding high.
You didn't build that.
Through the mountains climbing, twisting, turning further from my home.
Shut up your mouth with Obama. Shut up your mouth with Obama.
Be young, like a new moon rising, fear.
I've got a pen.
Through the rain and lightning, wandering out into this great unknown.
Yes, we can.
And I don't want no one to cry, but tell them if I don't survive, I was born free.
I've got a pen.
I was born free.
And I've got a phone.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Like the grandest canyon, wild, like an untamed stallion. If you can't see my heart, you must be blind.
What difference at this point does it make?
You can knock me down and watch me bleed, but you can't keep no chains on me. I was born free.
I've got a pen.
Anti-government, anti-science, and anti-Obama. They have a trifecta.
To the program. I'm your captain for this two-hour pleasure cruise, where unfortunately we still have 883 painstaking days, 4 hours, 57 minutes, and 5 seconds left of this godforsaken Obama nightmare. And then we gotta go to work. But until then, we must remain dedicated to the fight and the preservation of freedom, regardless. Regardless of that cost. It ain't that expensive. It ain't cheap. Freedom is not cheap, but we can afford it. It is tyranny that we cannot afford. Look around you. Take a look at what the hell's going on in the world. You don't see any tyranny, huh? You're not paying attention. You're not focused. You're part of the problem. Actually, you are the problem. You vote. That's the damn problem. Suppose everybody can't be perfect like me. Well, you know it as well as I do. As long as there's one liberal on planet Earth, that's all it takes is one. And you have a very, very, very busy news day. Well, tonight, we have a very special guest, Randy Kretschmar. She'll be calling in momentarily. He'll be on the show with us tonight. He is the attorney representing Michelle Ryder. Michelle is the mother of Isaiah Ryder. Isaiah is the 16-year-old boy in what I believe is held in captivity illegally by the DCF in conjunction with everybody. Everybody's involved. Everybody's got their grubby little mittens involved in these are in this. Well, I don't know what the hell you call it. I guess an issue. I mean, it's more than a scandal. There's so many entities involved in it, and it just seems to me that it's just too easy to fall into this trap And then here you are, kidnapping kids. You may not even realize it. I mean, some of these people, I mean, do they even think about what they're doing? Do they have any idea? Do they know? Are they conscious? Are they awake? Are they that incompetent? Is it laziness? What the hell is it? I don't know. I'm not that way, so I can't tell you. I can't figure it out. I can't for the life of me understand how somebody could say, oh, okay, well, we can't figure out what the hell's wrong with this kid. Let's blame the mother. Okay, she's a pain in the ass. Well, she's a mother. She's going to be a pain in the ass. That's part of being a mother. You look up mother in the dictionary, it says pain in the ass. She's a pain in the ass for a reason. That's her son. She's got every reason in the world to be a pain in the ass. I would be a pain in the ass if I was his father. I'm a pain in the ass, period, when I'm sick. Don't even come close to me. Doctors, stay away from me. I don't want you touching me. Always sticking your finger in places it shouldn't be. Taking quarts and pints of blood at a time. Every half hour on the hour. Giving you drugs, doing this. Giving you down here, get an x-ray, get this, get that. Go in those stupid MRI machines. Good God. I never thought I was that claustrophobic, but goodness gracious, God Almighty and sweet blue heaven. That drove me absolutely just nuts. But they gave me, you know, some earphones and closed my eyes, blah, blah, blah. But I'm a pain in the ass when I'm a patient because I don't like being sick. And don't touch me. Unless you got a pill for me that will cure me immediately. But she's a mother. And that's her son. And if she feels that's her prerogative as a mother. Not you as a doctor. Yeah, you know a lot of stuff. Okay, I'll give you that. But you don't know everything. You don't know everything. That is a mother. And if she feels, which is her, not only her right, but her obligation, her duty, her responsibility, to judge whether her son, which came out of her, is getting the proper medical attention. If she feels that she wants to get a second opinion, a third opinion, a 14 gazillionth opinion, well, that is her prerogative. It's not up to you, the doctor, to decide what treatment she's going to get. You can give her the best treatment that you can give her, that you can give the patient. But if the patient says, no, I don't want it, I'm going to go over there to Dr. Schmuckatelli over here, see what this bastard has for me, see what he can do. And if his idea is worse than yours, well, then I guess I'm going to come back to you and let you do it. But I'll make that decision when I get there. And this, for whatever reason, seems to be, I guess, not part of the equation. When do they teach a little bit of that in doctor school? Or do they just teach that the doctor's always right and whatever decision he makes, that's the way it is? Is this ego? Is that what we're dealing with? I think it's a combination of a lot of things. I think money is definitely involved. Incentives, bonuses, yada, yada, yada. We can go on for hours on that. Ego, yeah, okay, fine, there's ego, there's pride. Doctor doesn't want to, you know, doctor doesn't like the fact that he can't figure out what they, you know, everybody's a doctor house. What the hell's wrong? Well, it can't be me. It's got to be the patient. It's got to be the mother. It's got to be everybody but me. Well, it could be nobody. It could be something that nobody, no human, knows how to treat it. Nobody really knows what the hell it is. Is this a beginning to something else, or Is this something connected to something else? Are we looking at two or three different kinds of things that just happen to combine itself together? Are we looking at one thing? What the hell are we looking at? Nobody knows. Again, doctors know a lot of stuff. They do. They do. They do. They do. But they don't know everything. Nobody knows everything. That's why you're a human. If you knew everything, you wouldn't be human. But a mother, period. Or even a father, for that matter. A parent. Or a guardian, or a friend, or anybody. Doesn't matter if you're connected to this person, and if you feel that the doctor is given some kind of treatment that you don't like, you don't feel comfortable. Okay. You have the right to take your business down the road. I mean, it's like anything else. I mean, you go into a store, you buy your favorite, donut. Every morning you go in there and you get, your favorite donut. But, lately they start to suck. So you're like, I'm sick and tired of these, these nasty donuts. I'm going to go across the street over there. They seem to have a pretty big line. Maybe their donuts are good. Because these ones lately have sucked. They're just not doing it for me. Not giving me enough sugar, not giving me enough sauce, not giving me enough jelly filling, not giving me enough cinnamon, not giving me enough whatever. So you have the right to, cross the street and take your business down the damn road and get your favorite frickin' donut. Well, medicine is no different. You people, in the medical industry, you call it a business, okay, fine. If I don't like the treatment that I'm getting, I'll take my business somewhere else. I go in to buy an appliance. I don't like the treatment of the salesman or a car. I go in there and I got some joker and I know about car salesmen. I was one. The business manager, I had a great time in the car business. I understand the car business. It's not as bad as you think. At least our dealership wasn't. But are there bad dealerships? That there is no doubt. There's good people and there's bad people, period. Doesn't matter what you are. I don't give a damn what you are. Even criminals. There's good criminals. They may have a good heart. Charles Manson was a hell of a nice guy. But look what he turned out to be, huh? So you got a nice heart. Look at, what was that? Ted Bundy? Oh, yeah, he was a real gem. He was a sweetheart. And what was that other guy? That big fat guy dressed like clowns? I hate clowns. I do. I can't stand them. Never liked them. When I was a kid, Mom took me to the circus. I think I could have been 5 or 6. These stupid clowns come out. Mom, what is that? These guys are dumb. Get them the hell out of here. I want to see them elephants and them tigers again. Screw these stupid clowns. They're not funny. Oh, look at that. He's, fall down. Oh, gee. Yeah, I didn't expect that. I was weird like that as a kid. Phoniness, I just never liked. I just never understood it. So I don't like clowns. Plus, they creep me out. Them and frogs. Frogs are creepy, too. Oh, my God, now how in the hell did we get onto this? Oh, well, let's see if we can turn the ship around here and get back on track here. Back on course. Well, what this kid is, this Isaiah Ryder, I hate to use these words that are, strong, but, captivity and, victim and this and that, but it's true. He is a bureaucratic prisoner. There is money involved in it. There is ego. There's also fear. You have fear, people are afraid to lose their job. Fear to lose an election. You got judges, and oh my God, if they release this child and then something happens, and then, oh, it's going to be me, and I'm not going to win an election. Well, stop worrying about your job. If you're afraid to lose your job, you're not doing your job. You don't deserve your job. Don't be afraid to lose it. Just do it. I mean, everybody can see this case is ridiculous. There's nothing here. There's no evidence. just as there was with Justina Pelletier. Nothing. There was no logical reason. And how long did she stay in there? She was in captivity for what, a year and a half? Now, this kid's been in captivity for now, I think, what, 7, 8 months, 9 months, 10 months? It's still too long. I don't care how long it is. It never should have happened in the first place. But there is a lot of fear, and I don't understand this. I'm afraid to lose my job. I still cannot. I don't get that. I've never been that way, so I don't know what it's like. This is why I don't think that I'm human. I got a little bit of some other kind of animal in me that just doesn't get it. And then you've got incompetence. I mean, it takes incompetent people. It takes somebody really incompetent to lead. Seems that way anyway, though, doesn't it? I mean, the more incompetent you are, the higher you go in politics. Well, I mean, I'm not, you know, Einstein. I'm not exactly Duff or Dumbbud either, but I mean, if Nancy Pelosi, I mean, why can't somebody like me? Why can't somebody like you? Why can't somebody like you run? That's how we have to start thinking about things. We can't keep saying, well, there's nobody running. I'm just going to vote for Boehner again. At least he's a Republican. Well, what the hell does that mean? What do you mean there's nobody running? Oh, well, screw it. Well, what are you doing? Oh, I'm, you know, gaining another 5 pounds by eating another box of Cheetos over here watching the Kim Kardashian show. Well, get off your ass. Everybody's got to do their part, man. You can't just sit on the couch and let everybody do everything for you. Oh, well, it's the government. Let them do their thing. Blah, blah, blah. Well, no, they're not the government. We are. We're just putting these people in to do our bidding. Well, we as the people, we need to figure out what the hell is our bidding. What the hell do we want? Do we really want the DCF to have the power just to come in and say, okay, fine, you are now ward of the state? Huh? You know, and I talked to Randy Kretschmar earlier. He hasn't called in yet. Hopefully he calls in soon. I want to get going on this. I want to find out what the hell he's got to say. We had a nice conversation, and we talked, you know, a little about the legality. And, you know, he says, and everybody says, he says, well, it's not legal, but they continue to do it. Well, this is where we step in. We've got to demand more. And if it means you got to go to a town meeting or go to this meeting or that meeting or write a letter, make a phone call, send an email, send a tweet. Well, then you just got to do it. It doesn't hurt. It only takes a few minutes, man. That's it. That's the real cost of freedom is time. Spending, doing stuff, anything, standing up. No more. There's a lot of things you can do, especially when you go to the voting booth. And if you feel you're a good enough candidate to run, well, then you need to start running. And don't be afraid. Because, oh, well, John Boehner, he's Speaker of the House. You can't run against him. Well, why? Well, because he's... You got to wait until after a Democrat beats him, and then you can run, or unless he retires. What the hell does that mean? That's stupid. That's ridiculous. Look, this is our government, not theirs. This is ours. So we got to take care of it. And so far, we haven't been taking care of it. They haven't been taking care of it. There's blame to go all the way around for everybody. And even what's going on here. There are literally thousands. God only knows, I mean, what the real number is. I can only imagine. Of families that have been separated, I believe illegally, We still don't know. I mean, how can that? How can they legally take a, you know, unless there's an emergency? But there was no real emergency. But they used these cockamamie excuses. Oh well, it's medical neglect, or it's. They come up with anything. Well, anybody can, you know, squat and pull anything they want to out of their ass, but it doesn't make it, you know, doesn't make it gold. I mean, my Lord. I mean, look at the power that they've been able to have, and why? How can that possibly be? How can a bureau, which I don't know what it falls under, the DCF, I don't know if that falls under Health and Human Services or what. More than likely, it probably does. And if it does, then it's a hopeless lost cause. I mean, there's only one way to get rid of that, and you've got to get rid of the HHS. Which, as far as I'm concerned, we have, first of all, we have too many agencies that are doing, well, I don't think we're getting the best bang for the buck, to be honest with you. I don't see it. I don't see the bang. I don't see the buck anymore. Where's the buck? Honey, you seen the bucks? You seen any bucks? Ah, she ain't seen the bucks. Nobody's seen them. They don't exist anymore. How about that job? You seen your job lately? Honey, you seen the jobs? Ah, go back to your Kim Kardashian show. Now here's another bag of Cheetos. Gain another 5 pounds. Of course nobody's seen them. They don't exist anymore. And why do we allow this? I don't know. I don't. What more I could do? I don't know. I'm trying to figure it out. I'm trying to learn how to fight these people. Hopefully Randy Kretschmar, if he calls in tonight, hopefully he knows. Maybe somebody's got the idea. I want to find out how to fight these people. I mean, we know it's illegal. So how can they get away with it? Doesn't make any sense to me. Absolutely none at all. Well, they are still asking for your support. You can go on Team Isaiah or Save Isaiah. Or if you're a Twitter rat, go on hashtag Team Isaiah or hashtag Save Isaiah. It'll get you where you need to go. All the proceeds go to help out Michelle to fight this big giant machine so she can go back and forth. She's got a lot of legal matters. Now, this is another thing that drives me nuts. Here they take these people, and now they force this woman to have to quit her job to fight this, having to accept donations to fight this. And for what? For what? Now this woman has to go basically into debt. Get a lawyer. Get this, get that. I mean, why are you destroying? You're destroying not only this kid's life at 16, who's already got a foot amputated, part of the other part of his leg. He's got a disease that no one seems to know what the hell it is and how to fix it. Then we got a mother who's, you know, devoted to her son. I mean, she's done everything for the kid. She's taken him all over the place. Look, if you've got a mother that's going to take you all over the goddamn country, trying to get you the best medical attention that she can do, and the Pelletiers are the same thing. How the hell is that medical neglect? How could a judge possibly go, now, wait a minute now. How can you sit here in my courtroom and tell me this is medical neglect? When this woman has taken her son from Kansas City, Missouri, to Boston, to Chicago, to here, to there, to every damn doctor, wherever she's been, and done everything she can to give her son the best medical attention that she can not only afford, but she can offer, she can give him any way that she could do it. And you're going to tell me this is medical neglect because she wanted a second opinion? Because you couldn't figure it out? Well, yeah, maybe you can't. Maybe no one can figure it out. But look, you as the patient, you have the right. If hospitals are supposed to be business, you have the right, you as the patient, the customer, to take your business somewhere else. You don't like the doctor, you don't trust the doctor, so what? They should be used to it by now. I'm sure they don't like a lot of patients. They unfortunately can't get rid of a patient. But if these doctors claim that they're so overworked and somebody wants to go somewhere else, they should be, all right, fine. I can't figure out what the hell's wrong with you. So if you want to go somewhere else, go. I'll go work on all these people over here that I can figure out what the hell's wrong with them. That's the lazy mind. The intelligent mind would say, you know what, we're going to keep trying until we figure something out. If you want to go somewhere else, you got an idea? If you can find a doctor that knows what the hell this is, I'd like to know. And I'd like to, step in a little bit and check in and see what the hell he's doing. Maybe I can learn something because I'm a scientist, a doctor. And I like to learn new things. So if you got a doctor that knows it, then maybe you can figure it out. I'd like to learn it. So you can do whatever you want to there, Michelle. See, you are the customer. It's your prerogative. You do what you want. You have freedom. Oh, that's right. We don't have freedom anymore. Honey, you seen the freedoms? Ah. Of course she hasn't. No one has. We think we see them. We feel like we still have them. But then we go outside and realize, no, we don't. Can't say anything on Facebook now. Now, if you say something on Facebook, your boss fires you. Imagine that, getting fired for saying something on Facebook. Well, what's the difference if you say something on Facebook, which is basically telling your friends, anybody who's your friend, what's the difference you telling your friend on Facebook or telling your friend in the lunchroom or the smoke room or the bathroom? Or your office? Or the meeting room? Or the hallways? Or anywhere on the grounds of the job? What the hell's the difference? Oh, you put it out so everybody can see. Well, no, nobody can see it but my friends. Oh, somebody can take it and share it. Okay, fine. I still stand by it. We have a little thing called freedom of speech. We don't have that anymore. You can say whatever you want as long as it fits within these particular parameters, which who sets the parameters? Well, I guess if you've got an organization and you throw a fit every time somebody opens up their mouth, I guess you do. All you have to do is just simply feign and, I'm offended. Of course you're offended. You're an idiot. You offend me. How come you're not in jail? Oh, that's right. You're a Democrat. Yeah. You're beyond reproach. Yeah. Well, they still are looking for proceeds, still looking for support. All the proceeds will go to help out Michelle, help fight this machine. Or you can send her what you can at Team Isaiah, P.O. Box 90129-4. Kansas City, Missouri, 64190. You want to be a part of the program tonight when he calls in? I guess maybe the time was wrong. I thought I gave him the right phone number. But I think he's in Kansas City, so he might got the times all screwed up. So maybe he'll call at the top of the hour. Figure it out. But it doesn't matter. We'll go in and we'll start talking about some stuff here. There's always something to talk about. I mean, you can go on the air for 24 hours, 7 days a week, nonstop, holidays and everything. You can still talk. But if you want to be a part of the program tonight and ask Randy a question, 646-716-7978. So let's see what the hell is happening in the news here tonight. I tried to avoid it today, but I, you know, Ferguson's still blowing up. I know we got that reporter. He got his head chopped off by these ISIS bastards. Yeah, we sent over a couple of little smoke bombs. Boop-a-doop-a-doop-a-doop. Why is it all the time that we've always had these opportunities to do something and we never do it? We've had how many opportunities have we had to cripple jihad and we blew it every single time? I mean, you could go back. I mean, if you wanted to, you can go back. I mean, to Carter, you can go back to Nixon, you can go back to whenever. It's not the point. The point is we've dropped our shorts too many times. We need to pull them up, buckle them up, suspender them up, however the hell, tie them up. I don't care. Super glue them up. But keep them up. I'm sick of this crap. And for what? Who's gaining? Who's winning? Are you winning, Obama? You think you're winning? What are you winning? Huh? Huh, sweetie, what are you winning? You winning friends in, you know, the Muslim community? Is that what you're doing? I mean, you come out and you say all these, you know, tough words and nice words and, you know, they're well-crafted. But they're not coming from you. When you give these speeches, these should not be from behind a teleprompter. I mean, that's another thing. Why would you do that? I mean, he couldn't even talk to a little kindergarten class without a teleprompter. Put your kindergartners, for God's sakes. Half of them are still crapping in their damn pants and sucking their thumbs. What the hell? You don't need a teleprompter. They're children. You don't need a teleprompter in front of adults either. You're the president. But that's me. I'm the whack job. So, I don't know. I still think there's only one way to end this, and we've got to get everybody on board. Muslims have got, the Muslim community has got, they've got, look, they're going to have to step up. This is their land. If they want it this way, well, you've got it. But if you're sick and tired of it, which I'm sure there are some that are, well, you're going to have to step up. Lead the way. We'll help you, but you know what? This has got to come from you. And it's got to come in a lot of different directions, too. You can't just fight the war on the battlefield. I'm not saying you got to brainwash people, but you do have to fight, you know, that war of the mindset. Look at the mindset we have in this country today. I mean, as long as you're a liberal, you can get away with whatever you want to. But if, you know, you think freedom for all and, you know, well, that's racism and that's homophobicism and misogynism and all these other isms. Ism schmisms. Just because you're losing the argument, you got to discredit somebody, which makes absolutely no sense to me. Well, maybe Randy Kretschmar can make sense of it all for us tonight here. Let's get him on the line here. We'll push the right button here. Mr. Kretschmar, welcome aboard. How are you doing tonight?
Doing fine, sir. Sorry I'm a little late.
That's all right. That's all right. I can look, I can talk for hours on anything. I can just keep going. That's why I do this. But first of all, I appreciate you taking time. I know you're busy. I know, I understand you got a lot on your plate. I do appreciate it. I want to welcome you aboard. I've been talking about you all for the last, well, half hour or so here now. So,
well, I just want to tell your listeners, first of all, I just want to tell your listeners, don't believe it.
But before we begin, my listeners, they know about Isaiah Ryder. They know who Michelle Ryder is. But just for those that have, you know, a lot of times people tune in, and a lot of times this show is also archived as well. So real briefly here, give the listeners a brief synopsis of this case, what your relationship is with this case, and then I'm going to get into some legal matters of the case, a little bit what we talked about earlier, and then I've got some new stuff. Maybe we can make some headway tonight. So,
well, a brief synopsis of the case is my client, Michelle Ryder, who's the mother of Isaiah Ryder, never did anything but try to get her son the best medical care she could. He has a rare genetic disorder, and it's fairly debilitating. He has had several surgeries. It's a complex medical situation, at times at least, not necessarily continuously. So she's been in a position since he was 6 years old, as a single mother, of dealing with this. Needless to say, that causes, it would cause anybody a certain amount of stress or anxiety. She recently ended up at Lurie Children's Hospital in Chicago for some surgery for him. And basically, after the surgery, he had a recurring pain problem and a spasm, localized seizure. They call it a non-epileptic seizure. It's localized, but in his leg. And the doctors had no idea what to do. They got frustrated. They got scared. At one point, the surgeon walked into the room and threw his hands up and said, "I don't know what to do. We've had everybody in the hospital here, but we don't know what else to do." And they, and you know, of course, Michelle at that point thought to herself, "Well, that's not good enough. We need to get out of here." And it went downhill from there. And eventually, they decided to blame her. They called the Illinois Department of Children and Family Services and took her son away. That's the case in a nutshell, and she's been crying ever since to get him back. You know, the excuse was medical child abuse, which is an odd concept, as it turns out.
Well, it's very broad in general. You could use that as anything. I mean, that you know, it just seems to me that if you're going to separate a parent and a child, it seems to me that your medical neglect must be very specific, and you must show actual physical evidence. I mean, well, you know, do we have scars? Do we have this? Do we have that? I mean, what do we have? So how are they allowed to get away with it being so general like that, and how did they get this power, and why is not a judge?
It's worse than you think. You know, there's an old concept called Munchausen's disorder by proxy, which basically boils down to somebody wants somebody else to be sick and goes about making them sick because they get a psychological reward of some sort, a payoff for it. This is a concept. What's that?
If they can cure them, is that what you're talking about? They get them sick, and then they get I guess their fetish. I guess it would be if they're able.
That's exactly it. They want somebody else to be sick because they get some kind of psychic position or payoff from that person being sick, whether it's because they're the caretaker, whatever. It's a concept that arose sometime in the last century. I don't remember the whole history, but it got discreditable enough, actually, that they've changed it to medical child abuse. And medical child abuse is a little bit broader in that it does not imply any motive by the caretaker. Now, here's where it gets interesting. The leading book on this says not a single word about any responsibility of the treating clinicians. They apparently are taken completely off the hook for the medical abuse of the child because, in theory, they have been tricked into providing this treatment by a caretaker who has fabricated symptoms or exaggerated things or created trouble through anxiety with the patient or herself or whatever. And yet, it explicitly denies that there is any necessary, the concept explicitly excludes any necessary motivation on the part of the caretaker. So what do you know? This is something that just happens out of the sky. Nobody has any responsibility. You can't imply any motive or any intentionality. In other words, guess what? It's an incoherent concept. And when you charge somebody with doing something that's an incoherent concept to begin with, in my opinion, it's a violation of substantive due process of law.
Well, there's a lot of laws that are broken. Now, what happened in the latest hearing? Now, this was what? This was like 2 weeks ago. What was the outcome? And obviously, we know their reasoning. But were they supposed to show evidence in this hearing that they had a legitimate reason as to why they separated the parent and child? I mean, was it an evidentiary hearing, or what exactly was the hearing? Why are we not hearing this in the news? This is what's driving me nuts.
Well, you will, I think. There were two networks there. On August 11th, there were about 30 protesters with signs and chanting, and two network news stations were there. Unfortunately, it was the same night that Robin Williams committed suicide, so that kind of bumped it. But there are a lot of media who are interested in this. TheBlaze.com has done a big piece on it, and they continue to be interested. What happened is we actually have had two hearings in the last couple of weeks. The first one was August 11th. It was scheduled. And it was essentially just a status hearing, or it was supposed to include a court family conference. It's an organizing hearing, really. I came into this case after the initial, there's three phases in any case like this. The first one is emergency custody or temporary custody. And it's almost like a grand jury proceeding. They'll accept any kind of hearsay, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The point is, if a kid's in danger, then we got to somehow take emergency action. So that was over with by the time I came into the case, and the court had decided on whatever basis, without going into a lot of detail. The court had decided, yeah, they're going to take emergency custody. So Isaiah Ryder was put in foster care on the south side of Chicago. Now, August 11th is, like I say, a sort of organizing hearing for the next phase, which is the adjudicatory process. And it is, in fact, a trial of the medical child abuse or neglect charges. It's an evidentiary process to determine whether or not there is abuse or neglect of this child. Now, what we did, I had filed a motion at the same time I filed my initial appearance, just because I have to drive about 45 minutes to get to this venue, and I figured I might as well cause trouble for somebody. So I wrote up a motion in about 20 minutes, having to do with the Indian Child Welfare Act. Isaiah Ryder qualifies as an Indian child because his
right.
Mother
I
is,
wanted to get into that yeah. with you as well later on. I wanted to find out. I mean, she's a Choctaw. Since she's got,
yeah.
I mean, there's so many different. What I'm saying is there's so many reasons that this child should be brought back to Michelle. I mean, with this, the Indian Child Welfare Act. Why couldn't the judge, how is this a, well, is let this me, a let real me law, I thought, or how do they not?
The Indian Child Welfare Act is a federal statute that takes precedence over state juvenile court statutes, and it says cannot put an Indian child in foster care without clear and convincing evidence and expert testimony, and they hadn't done that clearly in the temporary custody or emergency custody proceeding. So I filed a motion just saying, you know, we have to vacate all previous orders because the whole thing's in violation of the federal statute.
Well, don't they have to go to the tribe as well, too? I mean, don't they have to contact the tribe, too?
Yeah, they have to get the tribe involved to whatever extent the tribe's willing to be involved. You know, the tribe in this case is in Oklahoma. They don't have the resources to send an attorney or whatever. I mean, they have a nominal connection to the case, but they actually aren't interested in doing very much. And Michelle doesn't have a lot of connection. I mean, she's formally registered as a full-blooded Choctaw. It's not like she doesn't qualify. Certainly, according to the statute, Isaiah qualifies under this. But, you know, it's not like they ever lived on a reservation or anything like that. The only point is that, as it turned out, this was something that the court in Cook County, Illinois, didn't have a lot of familiarity with. In fact, this judge said, well, this is the first person that has ever been in his courtroom in however many years who actually had their registration card and could, you know, easily prove that they qualified under this statute. Anyway, I filed a motion to reverse everything because of the violation of this statute. And ultimately, it was kind of funny. It was a knockoff motion. I just wanted to have something in there. I spent maybe 20 minutes on it, but when I came in on the 11th of August, this was the first thing it was taken up, and I thought, geez, you know, I kind of forgot about it. I hope I'm prepared to really argue this. Well, it turns out it took most of the day on this issue. The judge had spent many hours researching the case law. The state's attorney had, you know, a mile-long list of citations. And I thought, geez, I'm just going by the plain language of the statute. But they argued it for a long, long time back and forth. And the decision was essentially that it can't possibly be intended, the Indian Child Welfare Act, to apply to the initial emergency stage of this process. To me, that's an appealable decision, and it's something that can be changed by state legislatures. But I cannot say that it wasn't a thoroughly considered and reasoned decision. I can only say I disagree with it. But I think that the standards under the Indian Child Welfare Act should apply to everybody. I think it should be harder to take people's kids away.
Well, that's what when I first heard about this, when I was talking to Michelle before she came on, and I, you know, I think I was talking to Nancy Rubenstein, and we were talking about the Child Welfare Act, and she said, yeah, she's, you know, Choctaw, and I said, you know, we were talking about the Welfare Act, and I said, that's the first thing that I said that came out of my mouth. I said, why is that not for everybody? And she goes, I don't know, I don't know. I mean, to me, it just seems that if you were going to separate child from the parent, I know, okay, fine, I understand it's an emergency, but you need to have if it's an emergency, you're going to have evidence.
Not only that, but an emergency is an emergency for about 48 hours, not for 4 months, which is how long Isaiah Ryder has been in foster care.
Right, that's what initially was supposed to be, I think, 24 or 48 hours, and it has ended up being, what is it now? He's on his ninth month now, whatever?
No, it's since April 15th, so 4 months.
Yeah, Well, I don't care if it's 4 hours, 4 days. I mean, it's,
well,
you know.
He's in a foster home on the south side of Chicago in a kind of neighborhood that he's never been in before. And practically everybody around him either you know, does drugs or sells drugs.
They all got criminal records. Why would they send him in an area like that?
It's not a good situation.
No. Well, why would they send, you know, see, when I was a kid, we had, across the street, we had a group home. And there was a couple of different families that came in. And, you know, what I saw, and we were all friends with them. We grew up with them. You know, they were high school kids. And then when I got older, you know, they were high school kids and everybody knew about them. You know, we all knew the family. They were in the neighborhood. Of course, this was a nice neighborhood. But, I mean, if you're going to have a foster home, which is you're supposed to take a child out of a certain particular environment, why the hell would they put these foster homes directly in the epicenter of these dangerous environments? That's, to me, I mean, I can't understand if that's incompetence or is that deliberate or how.
Well,
how
certainly, certainly in this case, he is in a much more dangerous environment than he was ever in before.
Oh, I'm sure.
I mean, you can't find anybody who will try to say that's not true. Everybody wants to get him home, but of course the Department of Children and Family Services and the guardian ad litem and the judge and all the people who are part of this horrendous machine want to get him home through their process. And their process takes a long time, and it insults people, and it puts kids in dangerous environments, you know.
Well, the DCF is also lost. There was see, I got started on this with Justina Pelletier, and
yeah.
I could not leave this case alone. I remember the first morning I get up, you know, at 5 o'clock in the morning, I seen this story, and I had to talk about it. I blew a gasket, and then I started researching, and I started asking my friends here in New York, and they led me on to other people, and other people led me on to reporters and this and that, and I started digging in, and my God, the information that I have found, I mean, it is beyond comprehension. And when you talk to people, if they've never heard of it, they think you're nuts. They think you're crazy. This stuff is real, though. This is not,
well, people,
you know,
don't want to know about it. People,
yes.
You know what? All those people you talk to who think you're nuts and think you're crazy, they're paying for it with their taxes.
Exactly.
It's not like they're not part of it. It's not like they don't have some responsibility to understand this. They do. They want to look away. They don't want to know about it.
Right. Well, because, see, if they know about it, and I'm a writer, and I write all different kinds of plays, and I have a domestic violence play that I wrote, and I had to incorporate some, you know, stuff that I seen. I didn't realize how much I actually saw and was actually aware of until I started researching, and I had to incorporate that in here and in my play. And what I try to stress is not so much being aware of it. We're all aware of it. We're all aware of it. Hey, I'm sorry. If you're not aware of domestic violence, you're not aware of this, you're not aware of that, you know, climb back under your rock and stay there till your brain is fully developed. You know what I mean? But it's not so much awareness. It is the acknowledgement. But people don't want to acknowledge it, because if they acknowledge it, that means they're going to have to get their ass off the couch and actually do something. And that's what they don't want to do. They don't want to get involved for whatever reason. It could be a fear. It could be this. It could be that. It could be a host of reasons. But that's,
you know what,
it is,
Captain? People want to believe that we have this class of experts that we can depend on to tell us what's best for all of us.
Exactly.
And guess what? They don't know.
They don't exist.
Yeah.
But you're right. Nobody. Look, doctors know a lot of stuff. I'm not saying that they don't. And I love, you know, I'm glad that human beings figured out, you know, medicine. But they don't know everything. Nobody knows everything. That's why we're human. And, you know, okay, fine, I can understand that the doctor's ego gets a little bruised here, his pride gets a little scarred, because he can't figure it out, and the patient wants to go take her business down the road. okay, fine, get over it. You know, I mean, I'm sure they have to go through this a lot. So I don't understand what the big deal is. If somebody wants to take get a second opinion as a doctor, it seems to me as a scientist that if he can't figure this out, and if she wants to take it down the road to another doctor, maybe he can. Maybe this doctor can go over there and see what the hell he's doing and maybe learn something. I mean, it just seems to me that would be the mentality that you would expect from the doctors, but we're not seeing that. I mean,
well,
the
fancier the hospital and the more they're connected with research and academic institutions and so on, the more paranoid they are. It's almost like the hospital has a personality disorder. They're afraid of people who question them, and the organization reacts to defend itself against anybody who doesn't just take orders and bow down to them.
But that, I mean, but if somebody wants to take their business to another doctor, I mean, how are they going to be? I know they're afraid of getting sued and this and that, but I mean, how are they going to be held accountable or responsible? So, how do they? I don't see how the dots are connected. I mean, well, I don't see how the dots are connected on any of this stuff. But
well, you know, there are lessons to go around. I think if one particular doctor at Lurie Children's Hospital on a certain day had walked into that room and reacted a little differently, if he had said, you know, we don't really know everything. We're trying our best, and we'll keep trying, and we'll work with you, but here's what we think, and here's why. And if he'd reacted that way instead of throwing up his hands and saying, we don't know what else to do, and we've gotten everybody here, and there's nothing else to do, and by the way, it must be your fault, then I don't think my client would have been as exasperated as she was, but I think anybody would have reacted the way she did under the circumstances. She was upset. She was afraid. Her son was in pain, and they weren't doing anything. They didn't know how to help it.
She just was acting like a mother. That's all she was
doing.
That's
exactly right.
A natural reaction as a mother. I mean, how can they not understand that? Wasn't there any female mother anywhere in that hospital that could have said, hey, wait a minute, you know, you man doctors may not understand what it's like to be a mother, but this woman is a mother, so maybe you might want to cool your jets. I mean, I think there's another thing, a fear of people are afraid to step in and tell, I guess, their, you know, the head nurse or the doctor or this and that, hey, you know, you're making a mistake, you know that's wrong, and because if they do, then they're going to lose their job. Everybody's afraid to lose their job, and to me, I feel if you're afraid to lose your job, not only do you not deserve your job, but you're simply not doing your job. Don't be afraid to do your job, just do your job. And one thing I want to ask here, now we have, and I wrote this down, they have an emergency separation. I don't know what they call it, immediate whatever, but it's an emergency and it deals with kids. Okay, on that level, I can understand that. Okay, maybe there is an emergency and you need to take action and take action quickly. But how come there isn't any recourse for, you're supposed to be innocent until proven guilty? Why isn't there an emergency integration of sorts? Why can't a parent have the right to have an emergency hearing to say, wait a minute, there is no evidence, you've taken my kid away, it's supposed to be 48 hours, now it's been 4 months, and Justina Pelletier went 18 months, but there's no reason, and I want to contest this. How can they can, why is there no law that gives them the right to have an emergency hearing like that to get their child back and force the burden of proof on, I guess a DCF or whoever has the child? How come there isn't anything like that?
The classic tactic for that purpose is habeas corpus. But when you're talking about a Byzantine procedure, the way it has become in child protection with all the psychiatric and medical charges and countercharges and theories, all of the nonsense, you know, the higher courts really don't want to have to look through all of this. I mean, it seems if you go back to English common law, if you go back to the traditions of liberty in the whole Anglo-American legal scene, it seems as though you should be able to go to a federal court or a state Supreme Court or somebody and apply for a writ of habeas corpus and get these people into court to prove that they're justified in keeping this child. Well, the higher courts figure, you know, we've got all of this procedure at the juvenile court level, and they're the experts. Everybody's deferring to experts. I mean, the medical doctors, to some extent, have been blinded by their deference to psychiatric experts. You know, they're happy to take the opportunity of saying, well, this isn't just a difficult patient or a difficult patient's mother whom I have to somehow figure out how to deal with. This is somebody who's got some problem that some other expert knows about. Everybody's figuring there's somebody who knows what to do about this other than me. That's what it gets down to. And it affects the court system, too.
And then you hit on it before. There's, you know, that fear of people are afraid of getting sued. And then so if they defer it to somebody else, well, if something happens, well, I deferred it. So it wasn't me. Now it's this person's fault over here.
Yep.
Nobody seems to want to be more concerned with whatever the job is. They're only concerned with, well, how can I not get blamed for something if something goes wrong? I mean, that's a ridiculous way to look at things. How did you, I mean, I don't know how. I don't know how you could ever figure out the how. But what, I guess, because I'm impatient. And my listeners know I'm impatient. I just don't have patience for things that I shouldn't have patience for. And when you're kidnapping children simply because you don't know what the hell to do and you've got your stupid little ego bruised and you're going to get a bonus and you got all these reasons why you're doing that to me, I don't have patience for that because that my brain doesn't process that kind of stuff. I just can't figure out how they can do it. But what is it that people like, you know, my listeners, I mean, just your average Joe Smucatelli across the street, what can they do to get involved? I know we need education. I know that people need to, you know, find out what is actually happening. But what really is there that the American people can do? Because it's going to take a grassroots effort. It's really going to have to come from the American people. This is our problem. For whatever reason, we created it in the voting booth, and we're paying for it, and we just haven't been paying attention, but it's time to go to work now. What can we do to actually help? What can we do to fight? What can we do? Anything. It doesn't matter what it is, but what can we do? Because, I mean, I just feel so helpless, and I want to go out, and I want to roll my sleeves, and I want to do something, but I don't know how to do it. What can we do?
Well, I'll tell you what, Captain. The first thing I can suggest is you got to develop a habit, which is opposite to the way almost anybody thinks and behaves. Your habit has to be when you hear something that doesn't make sense, you should be attracted to it. You should want to look into it. The way most people react is they're going along day to day to day, They hear something that doesn't make sense. They look for something that does make sense. They go elsewhere. They don't
right.
stick around something that doesn't make sense. When you hear something that makes sense, if you can train yourself to be instinctively attracted to that and to think, why is this? What's wrong here? Okay, that's the most fundamental. I don't know. It sounds impossible, or it sounds too vague, or something. You want to do something else? Well, go to this website that my client has, Team Isaiah, and it'll tell you all kinds of people to contact. Contact Lurie Children's Hospital. Ask them why they do this. Contact the Illinois Department of Children and Family Services and ask them why they're utterly incompetent and repressive at the same time. Because they are.
Yes.
I saw a family service plan for my client that supposedly had a date of the 22nd of July on it, but nobody signed it or approved it until the 9th of August. And it was essentially a fill-in-the-blank form that had been partially filled in. And it had some nonsense in it, and it had some missing information in it, and it had absolutely nothing practical anywhere in 25 pages. And this was worked on, supposedly, by somebody. I talked to the case manager, or case whatever they call him, today on it. And I asked him, okay, first of all, tell me what this abbreviation means and this abbreviation and this abbreviation, because I don't even know the lingo, a lot of it. And he didn't know. He didn't know a couple of them. And I read him one part that says, well, you know, they originally took protective custody at the hospital on the 15th of April, and after 48 hours, they wanted to take a second protective custody, apparently, because it's only 48 hours that they're supposed to be able to do this. And somebody, some abbreviation that he didn't know what it stood for, told him they couldn't take a second protective custody. They had to take an original one. And I read him this two or three sentences, which in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, well, what this really means is that they completely screwed up legally, and now they're scrambling for some kind of justification. And I read this to him, and he said, you know, I don't understand that either. Okay, well, this is the guy who put the report together, who put this supposed family service plan together. And in theory, Michelle's supposed to get on board with this family service plan and get these services, and that's going to fix what's wrong. And the court will be satisfied, and DCFS, and everybody will say, yeah, fine, Isaiah can go home with his mother now. But, you know, it's not anything that she can possibly make any use or sense of. It presumes that she's wrong when she believes that she was only trying to help her son, and it positions her belief that all she was trying to do was help her son as something that has to be fixed. You know, so I'm sorry. I don't understand how we could possibly agree with this, and I don't, given that everybody knows perfectly well this is a contested case, I don't understand why they would ever even give us this supposed family services plan. And this is what our fine civil servants and our experts work on, and this is the kind of product that they create, and it's garbage.
I don't remember
how I got onto that. You asked me a question.
No,
oh, what can
I,
we
no,
do?
No,
what can a normal person do? Well, you know, a normal person cannot turn away from confronting what's being done with their tax money and their machine. They own this machine. They own the government.
That's why I preach all the time. This is our government. It's not their government. This is ours. And we need to start taking care of it. We haven't been taking care of it. We've been, you know, I believe that once we had, I mean, it's just my theory. But I believe, once you know, we had Reagan. He got us out of the Carter mess, and we were the strong superpower. You know, I mean, Russians were afraid of us. Nobody wanted to, you know, really mess with the United States. You know, we had an economy that was booming and boom, 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 boom. And we all fell asleep. Hey, we got our Constitution. We got our freedom. You know, we got our weekends off. We got, you know, Joe Conservative in the office. I got my freedom. Everything is fine. All of a sudden, one day we woke up, and hey, where's the freedoms? Where's this? Where's that? We lost it and we fell asleep. Well, now we're waking up, and now we got to go to work, and now we're scrambling, and this is our own doing. We screwed up, but we can fix it. And it, you know, it just, it doesn't really take very much, but it starts with the mind. You can't do anything until your mind is fixed first. You must have the mindset that this is wrong. And this is what drives me nuts, of how these people, knowing full well that they are separating a mother and a child, they're separating parents, they're separating families, they're destroying not only the child, but the mother, the entire family. They're doing this time after time after time. How they cannot understand or what they're doing is wrong, to me, that seems criminal. Is this criminal? And if it is criminal, how can you bring charges on this? Because we know we're not going to get anything from the DOJ. He's got all of his little reasons. He's too busy in Ferguson, Missouri. He doesn't have time to go into Illinois. We can't get the FBI. They don't seem very interested. I mean, to me, this seems like crimes against humanity of what they're actually doing to these kids and what they're doing to these families. I know it's not as big as what it, you know, what a lot of headlines say it is, but it's big enough to be a concern. And if these are criminal, how can you bring the charges if all the top dogs who run these charges are, I guess they're involved. I mean, right? I mean, I guess I'm confused.
Yeah, there's a lot of room for confusion. You know, the machine wants you confused. That's the way it protects itself. And you know, I think it has to start very simply with, you say you have to change your mind. Well, you gotta stop trusting in experts that you don't understand at all to do what's yep. right. You got to pay more attention, and you got to be willing to confront things that hit you right in the face anyway, or that are going to. I mean, in Illinois, you know, the state can't pay its bills. The public employee unions are afraid that there aren't going to be any pensions for their members, and for good reason. You know, the last four governors have all gone to jail once they were in office or something like that. It's almost part of the job description now. You want to be governor of Illinois, you figure you're going to go to jail afterwards.
Well, I mean, look at Chicago. I mean, that city. I mean, Al Capone would be, I think, afraid to live in Chicago. You know, of what's
going
on.
Well, you know what? I'm from Chicago, and I love this city. And as far as the crime rate, you know, it's celebrated everywhere now. The media love that, but. I'm not sure the murder rate's any higher than it was in about 1998. It's certainly gone up recently, but Chicago's a beautiful, wonderful city.
But no,
the
I've been to Chicago.
Livable,
oh, sure.
Big city in the world. Yeah.
You know, those Cubbies,
anyway.
You know, I've always had a soft spot for the Cubbies. When I was a little kid.
Oh, no.
I saved up a bunch of money in my piggy bank, and I had dollar bills, and I had change, and I had everything, and every day I would go and I would count, and there was a Cubs uniform that was in a Sears and Roebuck's catalog. I don't know if you remember, but
yeah.
Sears and Roebuck's catalogs used to be sent to you in the mail. So you always got them. They were free. And there was a uniform, and it was a model, you know, a kid model. It had a Cubs uniform, and I, you know, I loved baseball. And I said, I want that uniform. Well, my mom wouldn't let me buy that damn uniform. So to this day, I've still always had a soft spot for them Cubbies, and I don't know what they're going to do.
You know what? I'm going to get you. I'm going to get you a Cubs jersey. I've been a Cubs fan since I was 15 years old, and when my family first moved to Chicago from Michigan, it's funny. I was riding. I went to a Cubs game about a week ago. I met my wife and another couple down there. And I was riding the L from the suburbs down to Wrigley Field. And, of course, there are a bunch of people going to the game with the blue shirts and the hats and the Cub insignia and so on. And it's kind of a big party. And this guy sat down next to me. He had a suitcase with him. And he said, you know, it's the first time I've ever been to Chicago. What should I see? So I told him a couple of normal things that he'd planned to see. And we came within sight of Wrigley, you know, shortly before the Addison stop. And I said to him, you know, this next stop, everybody you see here is going to get off of this train. All these people with the blue shirts are going to go over to Wrigley Field to see their team lose. And if you want to see what Chicago's like, you should go see that.
Hey, you know what? Eventually, you know, and I thought
Oddly
Lou
enough,
Piniella.
That day.
You know, What's and that? Then, you know, when Lou Piniella, I thought, man, they got Sweet Lou. You know, because I'm from Washington State, that's where I grew up. But when I was a kid, we didn't have the Seahawks and we didn't have the Mariners. So I grew up a big red machine fan because, you know, they were, you know, Johnny Bench, Pete Rose. I got a Pete Rose autographed baseball, my most prized possession. I got to see my first game. Pete Rose started a fight on second base, cleared the benches. It was great. The manager got kicked out, Sparky Anderson. I mean, the whole thing, you can remember your baseball games, but I forgot where the hell we were even going with this. I know we were on the Cubs, but this, it doesn't really matter, but. In any event,
I'll tell you what. A bridge back to the political and social issues. Did you ever hear of the guy? Did you ever hear of this guy who's on CNBC? He's one of the talking financial heads. He reports from got an Italian last name, Rick Santelli. You ever hear of that guy?
I love Rick Santelli. Are you kidding me?
I tell people Rick Santelli is a cross between Ron Santo and the chairman of the Federal Reserve or something, because he only talks about interest rates and currencies and all this financial stuff. But you listen to him, and every now and then he'll come up with some amazing metaphor. You know, like they asked him. I remember once they asked him about. Whether Greenspan still had control or something like that. And he said, you know, when the captain of the Enterprise is on the bridge, even when he's got a bork in his brain, he's still in control. Guy is amazing. But he would be, you know, he's credited with starting the idea of the Tea Party because he went on some huge –
I was watching it that night, as a matter of fact. I was,
I'd love to see him run for president. I'd vote for Rick Santelli any day.
Well, you know what? There are a lot of people out there that have good ideas, that are good leaders. The problem is that I think we're not listening because it's too easy to, this person's been in there for so long, fine, I'll just vote for them again. They're the right party. They're either the Democrat or the Republican or whatever you want to vote for. And people don't realize they could be a candidate. They could be the one that needs to step in and can fix this stuff. Now, we as Americans, we know this is wrong of what they're doing. We know what they're doing is wrong, but we are refusing for whatever reason, I don't know, and I'm promoting that we get new candidates in there that understand that it's wrong. I guess that's the only place it's going to take. It's going to have to start from us, but it's got to build up into our government that mindset of we can't do this. Now, this is all – basically, this is government. I mean, it's all connected. I mean, the DCF is funded by, it's funded by the taxpayer, which means it's government. And
that's right.
They're allowed to get away with it. I mean, it's very difficult to sue the government. And what I was talking about, crimes, these are crimes, but how, there's no real way, is there? I mean, is there a legal way that you can, like, let's say Isaiah Ryder gets home. Is there a way, and Justina Pelletier is home now. Is there a is there a way that Justina Pelletier's family can, or Justina herself can sue the DCF, can sue the state? Is there a way, if Isaiah gets home, is there a way that Michelle and Isaiah can sue the state or states for, I guess, illegal separation? I mean, is there precedent? Is there law? I mean, is it possible?
Yeah, sure there is. There's always, you know, you can file a lawsuit for anything you want.
Well, look what they did to Rick Perry. Yeah, I guess you're right.
Yeah,
so.
If it's a crazy lawsuit, it's going to be dismissed quickly, and maybe somebody's going to say, hey, you should have known it was crazy, so you owe the other side their legal fees or something like that. You're absolutely right. There are people who have done things that are criminal and or that are tortious at the very least.
Right.
And those people, if they are correctly identified, are certainly liable. And in this case, we intend to do that. We fully intend to do that. You know, I've said, I've told people, decade after decade, we pay our taxes and we buy into this machine that, to borrow the old famous speech from the 60s, you know, the operation of the machine makes you so sick at heart you can't take part, but you're taking part because you're paying for it.
Mm-hmm.
But you get to where you have to put your body on the gears and on the wheels and on the levers and on all the apparatus, and you have to make it stop. And when something happens to you or to somebody that you're close to, like your child is taken away unjustly, then you're at that point. When you know this is happening, and it affects you, then you have to do something. And
yeah.
As far as suing people goes, I think of all the money that's gone into this for so many years, and I want to take that money back. That's what I want to do. First we have to get Isaiah home. We have to navigate this goofy juvenile court process, and we have to get enough people in that system who, if they're not entirely on our side, at least are willing to admit that Michelle is not some dangerous mother with some mythical mental problem that makes her want to harm her child. We have to at least get the judge to admit that or to believe that, or we have to give the judge enough evidence that he can say, well, I won't get in trouble if I decide that way. And that's a political process. It's a technical process. And we have to navigate that, and we have to get Isaiah home as soon as possible. But,
see, that's
but
the problem.
That,
anytime you put politics involved in anything, it's never going to get fixed. Doesn't matter what it is, whether it's a law that is, I mean, look what politics has done to the Constitution. I mean, there's nothing left of this Constitution anymore. It's all redacted and it's not followed. I mean, that's what just sets me off, and this is where my frustration comes in, because I want to solve this problem immediately, and I know that that I can't do it, and I'm trying to be patient. But I want to know is what are the real is there a way to find out? I guess there probably really isn't, but I guess it's, you know, speculation. But how many how many families like Michelle Ryder and Justina Pelletier, realistically, do you think that are actually out there that have been what sane people, you and me, and normal people would consider an illegal separation? What are we realistically looking at here? I mean, we're looking at hundreds, thousands, God forbid, hundreds
across
of thousands.
The country.
Yeah,
across the country, I think you're looking. I think you got to be looking at thousands. I mean, Cook County Juvenile Court is a big, beautiful building, modern architectural building, covers a whole block, and the parking lot, the parking structure, five levels or whatever it is, covers another block. And there got to be a couple thousand people that work in that building every day. It's not a small, quiet machine. It's a very large machine. That eats families and spits out criminals. That's what they do.
Yes, exactly. But it just seems to me that there's got to be some. I know there's an incentive part of it. I know the pharmaceutical industry, they're a part of it. There's a lot of people that are a part of it. But the issue itself. I guess being a layman here, it may sound like a stupid question, but the issue itself, which involves all of the families, whether they're hundreds, thousands, or hundreds of thousands, the actual issue itself of what they're doing, I know you'd have to show a lot of proof, but I mean, is this a Supreme Court kind of thing, or is it a criminal thing? I mean, what kind of court would take this particular issue other than, I guess you would have to change the law, you would have to get Congress to say that if you're going to separate child from parent, well, you need to have X, Y, Z, blah, 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 and be specific. But then again,
yeah,
it doesn't really
it's
matter.
Not Congress so much. It's not Congress so much as it is state legislatures. That's where the change has to come. Arizona has, in fact, a statute that specifies that the ICWA standards, the Indian Child Welfare standards, apply from the very beginning, including the emergency custody proceeding. But I believe Arizona is the only state that says that. But it would be a fairly simple piece of legislation. To institute exactly that standard in other states and for other families beyond just Native Americans. And in fact, I think there's a proposed bill in Missouri right now. I don't remember the name. I wish I could remember the name of the Missouri state legislator who wrote this, because I would love to give him a plug, but his proposed law simply says that you can't take a child away from a parent because the parent is following the medical advice of their choice. You know, in the Pelletier case, you had Lou Pelletier following one doctor's diagnosis rather than another doctor's diagnosis. And this bill is based on that situation to some extent, and it says no, you can't remove a child on an emergency basis because the parent chooses to follow particular medical advice. I would prefer if it said chooses not to follow, but of course then you get into issues like, well, there's some medical advice that isn't really just advice. It's kind of common sense, and people kind of feel like if somebody chooses not to give their child a blood infusion or something like that, well, then it is a social question. It's not purely a matter of the parent's choice. You know, and exactly where that line, that difference is,
right, you could argue that forever.
My
aunt was she was a Christian Scientist, and my uncle wasn't. But you know, she finally went to the doctor. She had cancer. You know, she finally, you know, I had to feed her the morphine. I hated doing that, but they don't believe in going to doctors, even children. So
yeah,
I mean, you've got that aspect of it too. It just seems to me logic would dictate I guess that's my problem. Maybe I understand logic and common sense, but it just seems to me that if you're going to separate child from parent, that you need, I don't care how big of an emergency it is. Look, if it's in a five alarm emergency, you're going to have the evidence. So you should be, it just seems to me that there needs to be a higher standard, that if you're going to have, the child needs to be taken away immediately. Well, the evidence must be overwhelming and compelling, and you must be able to present it immediately, not 2 weeks down,
to be frank,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, to be frank, I personally think that American medicine has absolutely ruined itself on the rock of psychiatry.
I'm with you on
when,
that.
When you talk about the quality of evidence in an emergency, if you want to use the whole Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, you can turn absolutely anything into an emergency, because there are all these illnesses that you can choose from that have.
Well, no, I'm talking like medical
criteria.
Neglect. Well, no, I'm talking like when they use the word medical neglect on the parent. And
medical neglect. You can say somebody's medically neglecting their child for not treating their depression or their anxiety or their inattention. In theory, it's neglectful. It gets to where it can be alleged as neglectful to simply not follow the advice of doctors. And that's what happened in Michelle's case. She disagreed with the doctors. She didn't like what they were saying, so they took her kid away. I mean, the ultimate end of this, particularly when you have all these vague subjective mental disorders that you can refer back to. You know, Munchausen's by proxy was discreditable, but medical child abuse as a diagnosis is barely removed from Munchausen by proxy. And by the way, I probably shouldn't say Munchausen's by proxy is discredited. It isn't really. It just people. It became a craze. It became you know, everybody thought, oh, you know, whenever there's anything we can't explain, then it's the fault of somebody who's deriving psychic reward from having somebody else sick. It's not as though that never happens. It's just that doctors also have to be able to talk to parents and talk them into things and explain things to them. They can't just say, if you don't do what I order right now, then there's something wrong with you.
Right. That's what happened. I mean, this is what I don't understand with the Justina Pelletier case. Here you have a kid, 7 months out of medical school, and he decides because he couldn't figure out what was wrong with Justina, he calls up his little psych friend. She comes over there in 20 minutes, which I guess what I've been told, that her particular mitochondrial disease takes months, if not years, to diagnose. And this doctor did it in 20 minutes, and they took her and they put her in a room by herself, and they were giving her whatever medicine that was not helping her. They were doing whatever they wanted to with her. They gave her the medical neglect by not giving her medication, which brought her back down to a wheelchair. She can hardly speak and this and that. This is what I'm talking about, this stuff like that, that is criminal. I mean, if you're going to blame the parent for being medically neglect of your child, and you go ahead and perform the actual medical neglect, I mean, to me, it seems like they got a good case. I don't know what they're doing. Is there a way? Does Michelle know if they're giving any kind of medication, any kind of medical attention at all to Isaiah? Is he getting anything, or is he just in a foster home, and that's it?
Well, he's in a foster home, and apparently they just let him run the streets at night, for that matter. That's what I'm hearing.
That's what I'm talking about. He's just there. Does he have a regimen? Does he see a doctor on a regular basis?
Yeah,
I
suspect he does. Certainly, they're responsible for doing that when he has neurofibromatosis 1, which is a very objective genetic disorder. If he's in pain, or if he has certain problems, or if he's developing tumors or anything like that, then they're responsible for knowing and dealing with that, and not that they'd be good at it, but for the moment, I don't know of any medical crisis that Isaiah has ended up in since he's been in foster care.
No, I just want to know.
I don't know that there hasn't been one, by the way, because sometimes they just don't tell you. I've seen that.
That was what I wanted to get at next. Does Michelle, can she find out what they're doing? If any kind of medical attention, does she have the right? I mean, I know once you become a ward of the state, Justina Pelletier, she wasn't even allowed to talk about any kind of medical treatment at all with her parents. Is that the same kind of way with her?
A little bit, not so much. One thing I have to give this judge credit for in Cook County Juvenile Court is he has stayed away from doing the kind of thing that they did in Massachusetts with a gag order and so on. The state's attorney at one time or another has tried to complain that Michelle's put this or that or the other on a website or something like that, and the judge has stated, at least on a couple of occasions that I'm aware of, something that once it's in this legal file, it's public information, and he's not going to stop her from talking to people about things that are public information anyway. So I got to give him credit for that. On the other hand, however well Isaiah may be in a strictly medical basis, I can't help thinking that he's in a clear dangerous environment and in a lot of other ways. He has no cell phone now. Why? Well, he's afraid to tell his mother anything except that his cell phone's gone.
He had an iPhone.
Yeah. In that neighborhood, are you kidding? Cell phones are like cash. He had told Michelle that he had to wear two pairs of pants so he could keep his phone where people couldn't get at it. Okay, so now it's gone. He has to call her from somewhere else. He has to use a different number to call her because he doesn't have a phone. Well, that should be fixed. It's not safe to not have a phone there. There's all kinds of things which, although they may not be explicit, objective medical problems that he's suffering right at this moment, nevertheless, they are dangerous. And I filed an emergency motion a week ago based on several little bits of bad news that Michelle had gotten from Isaiah. I said he's in a dangerous place. It's much more dangerous. We got to send him home. I didn't expect the motion to be granted, but on the other hand, I wanted to get all this stuff on the record. And in the end, the state's attorney and the DCFS attorney and even the guardian ad litem all poo-pooed this danger of where he is. You got to realize Dalton, Illinois is the exact town. It's in the bottom 3% of incorporated municipalities in the United States. for danger. It's 97% of the towns in the country are less dangerous than Dalton. Okay,
wow.
So these guys are saying, oh, it's not that bad. It's not the south side of Chicago. It's a suburb. Well, the high school has something like way under 10% of graduates ever go to college, and they want to put Isaiah in that high school in a couple of weeks. No, you know what? He comes from a decent neighborhood in Kansas City. His school, his high school in Kansas City, everybody goes to college after high school. Why is he in Dalton, Illinois? Come on, this isn't a good idea. This is it's horrendous. It's abuse. It's neglect. They're the ones doing it.
Well, what's going to happen now when, in a, you know, and I hate to say this, but a lot of these foster homes, the other children in there, the other, I can't call them children, but the other kids and some of the parents, I mean, there's a lot of abuse in just with the other kids alone. Now you've got, I mean, if these lawyers and the judges and everybody's all afraid that if they don't do something, that, you know, if something happens, well, what's going to happen when they send these kids into environments that they've never been to, and now, God forbid, I hate to say it, but something very tragic happens to him from another kid or because of the foster parent, and now, I mean, where do you go from
there?
Yeah,
Isaiah had a kid pull a gun on him.
That's ridiculous.
Supposedly it was a joke, you know, but nevertheless.
Oh, yeah, that's real funny. Yeah, that's a hoot. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, what I said when they denied this emergency motion, I said, you know, if nothing bad happens to Isaiah before he goes home to Kansas City, then maybe I'll look back and say this motion was not necessary. But on the other hand, if, God forbid, something bad does happen, there's going to be a lot of words that these lawyers have said in this court today that are going to be regretted. And I'm going to make sure I'm going to make sure the public knows exactly what those words were.
This is what scares me. And I was afraid, you know, of Justina Pelletier when, you know, she wasn't getting any medical attention at all. She needed it. You know, she was slipping. And this is what I'm afraid of with, and I didn't want to go into it too much with the mom when she was on here, but I mean, she's got to be scared to death. This kid's got to be scared to death. This is what scares me, is you're taking a kid that doesn't belong in this particular inner city. I can't fit in an inner city. I wouldn't know how the hell to act. I'd be, you know, beat up and whatever. And this is what scares me, is they're taking these kids that don't belong in these environments. And if it is with the DCF, I don't care if these kids are used to being on the street. They're supposed to be in the state custody, wards of the state, which means you got to put them in a real – I mean, you got to have them in a good environment. So why can't they take them and move these – well, it's too expensive. They don't have money. They're always going to come up with something. But – I don't know. I guess there's really – I don't know what the answer is other than, I guess, what we've been talking about is us human beings, we just have to no longer accept this, and I guess that's where it starts because I just – nobody else changing it. They're getting paid. They're getting bonuses. They're getting this. The more kids they put into the DCF, if they don't have enough kids in the DCF, well, they're not going to get any funding, and they're not going to have a job. Well, what is your job? Just stealing kids and putting them into a government agency? That's your job?
Yeah, that's the way it ends up. That's the way it ends up looking. And if you look at Isaiah's position right now and where he is and what kind of change and what kind of stress he's going through, don't discount the fact that this you know, he's a 16, 17 year old kid.
Huh.
He's very vulnerable in a lot of ways. He's mm-hmm. He's got a prosthesis. Now he has no phone. Evidently, his glasses were broken and they didn't fix them. You know, when you really put yourself in, when you really imagine the position that he's in, the stresses that he's under, it began to sound a lot like classic thought reform or brainwashing process. And they're trying to, you know, I've seen this before. I saw it with an earlier case some years ago. They work on the child. They convince the child that the only reason he can't go home is because mom won't agree to things. If mom had only gone along, then you could have gone home weeks ago. And stuff like that begins to come out. I swear they brainwash the kid into becoming a dependent and a criminal on the dole. They change him from being a kid who had a lot of promise to being a ghetto kid, basically. The longer Isaiah Ryder is in the environment that he's in right now, that's what's happening to him.
I mean, I can only imagine what, at 16, I'm looking back, you know, how I was at 16, and I was be put into a situation like that. I mean, I really don't know, but this whole family unit, whatever you want to call it, New World Order, sustainable development, Agenda 21, I mean, it's got a million names.
Yeah, I don't know all that stuff. There's some fancy theories out there.
Well, there's a lot of conspiracy theories out there, but when you take a look at what the New World Order, the Agenda 21, what they actually say, and they come out and they're not ashamed of it. They're not ashamed to tell you what this agenda is, and the United States is very big in it. Family unit is one of the things that they consider as unsustainable. Now, that to me doesn't make any sense, because the family unit, if it wasn't for the family unit, the human being never would have evolved into the species that we are, you know, today. And
yeah, it's
to
not,
me,
it not only doesn't make any sense, it's simply evil.
Exactly what it is. But this is where the criminal element to me it comes in, and I guess it really isn't, you know, a way to fight it, because you're going to have to take down to really get this, you know, all the criminal activity. I mean, you're going to have to get politicians and judges and cops and all these professional people, doctors, psychiatrists, and there's really no way to do it other than, you know, I guess with, you know, lawsuits and all this. But, I mean, after a while,
it's a less massive project than you think, Captain. The truth is there are only a few really bad people. Everybody else is just afraid or deceived, even though they're well-intended. Most people, like all but one out of maybe 40 people, is a well-intended good person like you. It's only that one out of 40 or something who is truly an irredeemable bad person, and that person you have to find and identify and take out of any position of power. The single most efficient and profitable investigation or strategy is to identify those individuals. The thing that's most interesting about a project like this case and several other cases is it affords an opportunity to find out who's who in this machine we call the state, because somewhere there is somebody who's doing this on purpose, and they're really well disguised. And they have all of this bureaucracy and all of this process and all of these regulations and administrative procedures that enable them to hide. But,
see, that's who I
want to
find. That's who I want to find
right
there.
Yeah, no kidding. Exactly. There are people like that I guarantee you there are people like that. I've seen them. I've known them. And I'm telling you, when you handle one individual like that, everything else that looked like it was bad disappears and collapses, because almost everybody is a good person and they're looking for a good solution.
Well, Jim Gottstein, he came on last week. He came on and he was talking about if we could just, he's trying to find a way to end it with the pharmaceutical side of it, because that's a whole nother, I mean, that whole pharmaceutical industry of what they're doing to people, not only to children, but to adults. He said if we could find a way to get at least like one doctor and you scare them. So if one person can get, you know, make an example out of, and he was trying to find ways, you know, to scare them that these doctors won't keep doing this. But I think it's going to take a lot of scaring to get them to do it. There's going to have to be a lot of prosecutions, and I don't think we've got enough jails in the country to put all these people in. So, I mean, everybody's trying to come up with a solution, but the bottom line is you need to use common sense. You don't steal kids. If there's no real reason to take the child, don't do it. But
yeah, almost everybody would agree with you on that. Almost everybody would. And yet they still pay for the machine, and some of them work for it every single day down at Roosevelt and Ogden Avenue in Chicago. I don't think we need that many jails. I don't think this has to be giant purging of huge classes of bad guys.
I know. You'd have hundreds of thousands, you know, millions of people into a jail. It would be, you know, it would be ridiculous. But if you can bring down one or two of the top dogs, maybe it might
be there.
You know, but who are these top dogs? And you made a good point. How do you find them? They're very well protected, very well hidden. I mean, I guess you'd have to go undercover. I mean,
no, you don't have to go undercover. You just have to have the right questions, and you have to keep asking them, and you have to be able to get the attention, and you have to be able to, you know, if you're running discovery on a civil case for rights violations or for even malpractice. Medical malpractice or the kind of suit that conceivably somebody like Justina Pelletier or her family could bring. If you're running discovery, if you have court-ordered discovery in a case like that, you can go most of the way toward identifying the individual who made this happen. You just have to think in those terms. You have to think in terms of, wait a minute, somewhere there's one person with a name who did this on purpose, and there's a whole lot of people who appear to have been involved and who are maybe too stupid to do the right thing or too afraid to resist the bad guy, but if you filter through it, sooner or later, you're going to find somebody who made something bad happen. I love Jim Gottstein.
Do we know who the bad guys are for this case?
I know what you're talking about. What's that?
Do we know, or are we close to finding out who who the culprits are with this case?
We will find out. We will find out in this case.
I don't like this case at all.
There's nothing I'd rather do. That's what I live for.
I don't like this case at all. It stinks to high heaven, and all the other cases, and I've read a lot of other ones, and then I found out. And when I found out about Isaiah Ryder, Nancy Rubenstein, she told me about it. She says, hey, you know, I've got the mom. She wants to come on. blah, 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 told me about the story. I went in and I said, oh, yeah, I kind of remember hearing a little bit about this. You know, I've read a million stuff. And then all this stuff. And so I immediately posted it. I immediately posted it on Facebook. The very, not even 20 minutes after I posted it, I get a message on Facebook from a friend of mine that had the same exact thing, and I've known this girl since I was high school. I didn't know about it. She was on cancer. They blamed her cancer. She blamed her getting cancer. It was her fault that she got cancer, and they had to take the kids away. And she called me, and, you know, she was supposed to come on. She's having troubles right now, so we're getting her on there. So it is a lot closer to people
There are a lot more people who are affected by this than you think. It's not just you've had your kids taken away. It's that you felt the threat at one time or another. My wife was talking to somebody that she works with about this case, and this is a upper management type businesswoman who said to her, It sounds crazy, and a lot of people don't believe that this happens. The natural reaction you find in most people is, well, the mother must have done something. There must be more to the story. And this woman said to my wife, you know what? This almost happened to me once. I went to a regular clinic with my kid, and they wanted to give her an antibiotic for something. And she had no fever, and I didn't think she needed an antibiotic. And I figured, well, you know, I don't want to give her antibiotics for 10 days if she doesn't need it. And she said, I went so far as to tell the doctor that, and he started getting angry with me. He started acting like if I didn't do what he said, then I was going to be in trouble. And I was afraid. And she said, I took the prescription. I never filled it. I didn't give my kid the antibiotic, but I guarantee you I never went back to that clinic.
Well, yeah.
And you know, it's there are very mild versions of this everywhere.
If you allow yourself to get, you don't even know it. You could get suckered into this so quickly and not even see any of the telltale signs, and then all of a sudden, boom, here comes a shark and gobbles you up.
What happened to Michelle.
We're running dangerously close. They're going to cut me off here very soon. I really appreciate the conversation here tonight. I really enjoyed myself. I know my listeners, they got some good information. You've got my support whatsoever, Randy. I know you got a tough job here to do. Keep up the good work. I can't stop talking about these people. I won't stop fighting. I know you won't. I appreciate you coming on board, and you are welcome back anytime you want, sir. So
thank you, Captain. First time I was ever on your show. First time I ever heard of you, for that matter. But I'll pay more attention now.
You're a good guy.
You have a good show.
We're getting bigger and bigger and bigger every day, and you know, all it takes is, you know, people just have to get informed, and that's what it is. So, well, they just cut me off. I got 30 seconds, and we're going to be cut off here. So, thank you, Randy, and we will see you very much later. All right, everybody, that's it for tonight. I want to thank everybody listening in the chat room. I want to thank everybody listening on their their smartphones, and everybody who's going to download later. If you like the show, well, then come back. Listen again. Join the fun. Tell your friends. Tell your neighbors. Tell your enemies. So we will see you back here tomorrow night at 8 p.m. Goodbye, everybody.